On Windows Phone, developers who made apps could make their apps super personal to the user. Why? Because they could access all that user information. But if you're writing on Windows or the desktop, you didn't have that until now. And that's what we're talking about on this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. It's user data in Windows 10. Hey, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Tony Pendolino. He's a program manager on the developer platform and ecosystem team. Specifically, he works on user data and the user data suite of APIs. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jerry.
Now, before we start talking about all this coolness that we're bringing to every device across Windows platform, let's talk about who you are. Who are you?
Well, like you mentioned, I'm a program manager on the operating systems group and the developer platform here at Microsoft. I've been here for about 3.5 years, and I work on a lot of the APIs that we're going to talk about here today, designing them and making a great platform for our developers on Windows 10.
Now, I saw you at Build this year talking about this suite of APIs, and last year, you've been working with user data for a long time.
Yeah, that's right, for a couple of years now. Before it was just on the Windows Phone, and now we brought it across all the different SKUs for Windows 10.
There's probably a couple of developers watching this show, and they're thinking to themselves, cool, user data finally over to the desktop. What's user data?
So user data, in the way we're talking about, encapsulates all the personal information and a lot of things that used to be called PIM data. So this is things like your contacts, your calendar appointments, your email messages, text messages, your call history. All of those things are what we're encapsulating into the term user data here.
Okay, so it's a lot of data.
Yeah.
Okay, so when I think about my contact list, when I think about my inbox, my email messages and things like that, I think of Outlook. So is this a sort of automation API tapping into Outlook?
So it's actually more like Outlook data would be written into a centralized database that everybody else can share. So when it comes to like your contacts, yeah, you think about them coming down through Outlook, whether that's from Outlook.com or from your Exchange service or any of a number of internet providers.
Sure.
But we also have that data written in from your social networks as well. And those are coming from different apps that are writing that data into the centralized database. So like Facebook and Twitter and those guys will write the contacts in also. And so all of that's been aggregated into one centralized location that we build a data model on top of that allows you to read that data with some caveats, of course. Some is private data, some is exposed to publicly. But it's one centralized location where all that user data can live and then can be accessed through a strongly typed set of APIs.
Okay. So let me see if I can draw the picture here. So I have Outlook installed, and it has my list of contacts. I uninstall Outlook, but I still have my list of contacts because they're not stored in Outlook. They're stored in some super secret operating system-like database that's somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's the case for a lot of your contacts. Now, there might be the case where Outlook is actually writing some of those contacts in. And in that case, if Outlook's uninstalled, then we remove any data that's associated with Outlook. Does that make sense?
Oh, I see. Yeah. All right, so let's pretend Outlook doesn't get uninstalled. But we're giving too much credit here to Outlook, right? So Outlook contributes to my list of contacts, but you're saying Facebook contributes to my list of contacts, maybe even Twitter, maybe even, I don't know, Yammer and things like that as well. Other things, let's just say other things, including regular apps as well, all contribute to this. And so it's not all about what's in Exchange or it's not all about what's in Facebook. It's all about what's in this database that's on the OS level.
Which also can come from any of your applications that the developers listening are writing, because those have the same write access in order to add their own contacts to that database, and so that they show up in Outlook, that they show up in Cortana and across the system.
Oh, and Cortana, of course. So when she's reading stuff, she's not trying to interact through Outlook or any other mail client. She's going straight to all my contacts, straight to my mail or whatever it is she needs to access. Oh,
exactly.
That makes tons of sense. That's why she can work so quickly as well. Hmm. That's really cool. Okay, so when we talk about the user data APIs and all these namespaces that we have available, we're talking about Windows runtime APIs, right? WinRT APIs?
Yep.
And they are APIs specifically to this database, this data store. You don't call it a database, maybe, a data store.
We usually call it data store, yeah.
Yeah, a data store. Good. And so how we access, so my application can do it. And now when my app wants to do it, we're talking about Windows apps. When my Windows app wants to access this data store, is that a type of capability that I have to request?
Right. So there's different security capabilities for each of the different data types. So you'll declare one if you want to read contacts data, one if you want to read appointments data, et cetera. And then furthermore, we have different privacy checks that are enabled in the system-wide privacy pages, which allow the user to turn on and off access for individual applications. So if your application wants to read contacts data, you would first declare the capability, and that would lets us know to show it on this store details page when the user's downloading the application. Then the user can also, after they've installed your application, go into privacy and contacts and then turn on and off access for any individual contact, individual application for each data type.
So it's sort of conceptually like background tasks where I, as an application, can start registering all those, but then the user can come in behind me and start shutting those right off, and I can't stop them from doing it. So I can start interacting with this database, and then at any time, they can come in and just turn it off.
It won't happen while your app is running because we'll shut your app down if the user switches the toggle. But, you don't have to. It just makes it a little easier, the programming model. We don't want to have you check for it in the middle of runtime. So you check for it on startup, whether or not you have access, and then you'll know that you can keep that handle open going forward.
Got it. And if it happens to get in one of those weird scenarios where the user does change it while you're running, you automatically, you're suspending my app, I guess, or terminating my app?
Exactly. Yep.
Well, that's probably the right thing to do, because if I rely on that, that's a big deal all of a sudden to change like that. And to monitor it constantly, it's kind of silly. All right,
It's the exact same model as like the location or that you should already be handling in your application, since the user can already turn it on and off.
All right, so when we talk about user data, let's make sure we're talking about all the right categories. So I heard you say contacts. That one makes sense, right? I can interact. So that might be useful for an application that they want to, you send a text message to all your friends. Don't type in all their email. Don't type in all their phone numbers. We already have it in your contact list. Well, let me pull them up for you. That's the gist of that, right? And appointments. So this is my calendar even is all. So if in theory, this is probably not true in practice, but in theory, if I didn't have any other clients installed, could Windows 10 check my email for me? I mean, is it actually going behind the scenes and pulling down the data from my server?
Yes. So there is a system-wide service that we call OneSync on Windows 10, and that is able to talk a certain set of protocols. So that can talk Exchange Active Sync, EAS, which talks to on-prem or O365 Exchange servers.
Yep.
It can talk WLAS, which is a form of EAS that talks to our Outlook.com services. It can talk IMAP and POP and SMTP, of course, for sending. And then it can also talk CalDAV and CarDAV. And so between those, it covers most other email and contacts and calendar services out there.
That is incredible. And in theory, again, my email client needs to support, another DAV that's invented. Jerry DAV is just invented and rolled out. You can then, on a cadence that's on the operating system level, my app never gets updated but just suddenly gets more capabilities because it's Windows 10 that does all the work. My app doesn't even know how it's connecting. It just does it, and it just relies on that. Oh, that's awesome.
The beauty of this model is it's not just that. It's not just on the Windows 10 cadence, but you, Jerry, could go write a connector application which goes and talks to Jerry DAV. Put that in the store, it would write it into the system database, and then your app would automatically see the data that Jerry DAV app is writing in.
Wow. Because I would be like what we were talking about earlier. I'd be like Facebook writing all that information.
Right.
Wow, that is awesome. And then eventually, obviously, if it catches on, becomes a standard, you guys would roll it in as well. Okay, let's think about calendar for a second. So all my calendars are there, I guess. And is iCal and all those things are flowing in there as well, and they're all registered by whatever client I use for my calendar?
Yeah, so iCal, you mean like iCalendar as an iCloud, or do you mean the protocol iCal?
I was thinking of the protocol.
Okay. So the protocol iCal, usually when you set up like an iCal ICS subscription, you hook it into one of your other services. So you like hook it into Outlook.com, and then it syncs down through the Outlook.com pipe. So that all just works automatically. There's some cases where people use like a .ICS is the extension for like if somebody sends you an attachment that's a new appointment.
Yeah.
And then that would be an expected application would register for the .ICS extension. There's a couple of them on Windows Phone today. Add to Calendar is one of them. They register for the .ICS extension. And if you open it up in your email, that application reads the data and then it writes it into your calendar for you.
Yeah.
And then it shows up in all the other calendar
apps. It truly is writing it into my calendar because my calendar is a central store. It's not writing.
Right.
This is a paradigm shift.
Okay, that's actually a case where it's using, again, one of the task APIs, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later. But it brings up, it says, it reads the date and time, it reads the duration, the subject, all that information out of the ICS file. And then it brings up a system UI. Then the user can say, save to this calendar or this calendar or this calendar. Then it'll show up in Outlook or it'll show up in any of the other developer written applications that show your calendar appointment.
All right, so we have access to contacts. We have access to our calendar. We have access to email. You said we have access to text messages. Now, we've brought this over to the desktop. The desktop doesn't always have text messages. What's the developer do to know what they can actually access?
Yeah, so the messages won't be available on desktop right now. So there's Windows 10 has a lot of these different device-specific APIs, and there's a well-defined pattern of where how you can check to see whether certain APIs are available on each different system. So that's something that we can you can definitely look at dev.msdn.com.
So that's probably the API information namespace where I just asked if that type's available.
Exactly.
To get access to user data, is that the core set of APIs or is this an SDK that I'm adding?
So in the one the Universal Windows application thing, there's contact, calendar, email are all in there. The call history stuff is also available across both, and the messaging is the one that would only be in the mobile extension SDK right now.
Only in the mobile extension SDK. All right, that makes sense to me. So that's interesting. So I have call history. I would have expected that to be in the mobile SDK too. That's
right.
Interesting.
So the call history stuff is designed in a way to work with our VoIP applications. So like we're talking on Skype right now here.
Yeah.
So conceivably, Skype could start writing call history into the centralized database, even though there's no cellular calls being made.
Oh, that's very cool. I could see how I would actually want that to have a unified history of everything I've ever called. And, of course, Skype works with or without a SIM, so that's perfect. Okay, so a call history, and then there is this other thing of accounts I have as well. So what's that? Maybe this will help shed some light on some things.
Sure. So there's the user data account is what we call the type in the Windows runtime API set. And these are a way to aggregate different data sets together. All right. So if you think about it, when you sign into your Outlook.com account, you're bringing down a list of contacts, you're bringing down an email mailbox, and you're bringing down one or more appointment calendars.
Right, right.
And the user data account is a way to say from your application, if you're building your Jerry Dav connector application, you want to be able to say, hey, these three data types are all part of this one data account. And then you should be able to support signing into multiple different accounts from your Jerry Dav connector. So you can say, hey, here's another account and this set of contacts, this these appointment calendars,
see.
These email boxes all are associated together.
So one of my accounts might be my corporate account going into my company. One might be my personal. One's my CompuServe account. One's my Yahoo account. One's my – I can't get any older. I couldn't think of one even older than CompuServe, but it just goes on.
Right, not just that, though. One would be your primary Facebook account. One could be your secondary Facebook account. So even if they're coming from the same app and the same service, then you might have multiple logins for that.
And so I have a way to – I could send the user out to those settings and like fast-track them right to that screen so they could adjust it. Is there a way for me inside your set of APIs to detect there's a problem and I want to send them out to those APIs or out to that setting?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's a concept on each of the different data types that this applies to, so the email, the contacts, and the calendar items, of a sync manager. And these sync managers have a current state on them, whether that's, you know, syncing appropriately. There's about three or four. I'd have to look at the enumeration. But it's things like, you know, an auth issue or an unknown issue. And then we provide an API that says, the ability to fix the account. It's basically show fix account async, I believe. And then you pass in the ID for the account, and it brings up system control UI that then is able to lead the user, hopefully, through some way of fixing that account state.
And if I were writing an email client or something like that, that's a good user story right there. I detect the problem on their behalf and then take them straight to the place to fix that problem. Yeah, that's really nice. All right, so I think we've covered all the data types that are in there. I'm noticing one that's missing, though. When I use Outlook, all right, I have mail, I have calendar, I have contacts, I have to-do items too. Is there something else that I'm not figuring? Is that just a calendar item or something?
They are just currently not supported in the API set.
Oh, well, that solves that. There you go.
Yep.
Well, a developer watching the show, they can you just saved them 15 hours of searching for where the to-do API is. That's perfect.
Okay.
What happens when I get onto Xbox? Are there anything special when I go into some of the exotic devices that we have that we're starting to introduce? Is there a holographic user data or anything like that that's coming along?
We're definitely working on it for the HoloLens, for the HoloLens view. They're very interested in being able to have your contact data. If you can think about like Skyping scenarios, it's very interesting to be able to read your contacts and your history information out of all that. We're not exactly sure where we'll land with Xbox yet, so that's a little bit TBD.
Yeah, because then it's all your gaming friends, and it's a kind of a different set, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Talk me through some first-party scenarios that we're doing here at Microsoft. How are we using these APIs outside of Outlook? I think that's the obvious one, but I'll bet we're using it in some more.
Sure. So the People Hub is built entirely on top of the Contacts APIs.
Yeah.
The calling application uses the call history APIs and the calls APIs in order to do its work, the phone dialer. We have the messaging app is using the chat APIs in order to do messaging. So we have all of those. And then there's other things that you might not think about initially. One is the Cortana, right? So Cortana is using the Contacts APIs. They keep their speech engine up to date with all your contacts. So when you say, call Jerry Nixon, it is able to recognize Jerry Nixon because it has read that name out of your database and created it in its engine. Then it's using the email APIs. We have the flight tracking ability for Cortana.
Yep.
So it reads through the email RT APIs, and that's how it knows, it looks for things coming from Delta or Alaska Airlines, and it reads that data out. And it uses the change tracking so it doesn't have to read the whole database every single time, and that's how it knows about those. Then for calendar, it uses them a couple different ways, right? So for it reads your calendar APIs to give you things like time to leave alerts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, those are cool.
That's a case of it reading your APIs. Then we have the ability, like we've mentioned previously, for apps to write data into the database. Well, on Windows Phone 8.1, we introduced reminders, and some of those reminders were time-based.
Oh,
so Cortana would actually use these same appointments APIs in order to write those reminders and so that they show up in your calendar in addition to being a notification when it's time for those to happen.
So can Cortana or an app like Cortana create their own discrete calendar that they put things into so it doesn't clutter everything else, but they can still keep track of it with the same mechanism?
That's right. They can create one or more calendars. So if that's how Facebook created three calendars, actually, in the Windows Phone 8.1. They would create one to keep all of your friends' birthdays on. They created one calendar for events that you're invited to, and then they'd create another calendar for events that you've actually accepted and are going to.
Now, I know one of the scenarios you see as a benefit to apps using this sort of API is they get to expand their networks. And so what do you mean when you say that? What's the concept that you're giving to developers?
Sure. So being able to read the contacts APIs, it's become a fairly standard practice across different app networks to have their own database in the cloud of all the users that they have in their system. So being able to read the user's contacts and then compare that to the ones that they know about in their system, that gives instant gratification to the user saying, hey, this person is somebody you know about. We know how to message this person, how to video call this person without having to do any sort of like first buddying up or friending as a manual process. So there's that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's nice.
Then there's the ability to very easily do things like sending text messages and sending emails, where you don't have to worry about protocols or anything like that, so that you can have quickly and easily the, invite this person to play this game or, send a greeting card to this person. All those things are super easy to do with these namespaces.
All right. Well, before we start talking about how to contain this, right, because it's not a free-for-all for all this data, there are some rules around it. But before that, is there a limit as I start filling things in? Do I have a size limit, some sort of quota that I need to manage?
No. It's kind of like your isolated storage on the phone or on the Windows, right?
The hard drive is the limit.
Right, exactly.
Is there, now what about if I have two devices, am I Is it roaming from device to device, or are there two services doing the identical thing on each device?
There would be two different services, right? So we don't roam anything in the database across. So all of our data, if you think about the data store on the Windows, it really is just a cache, for the most part, of things that exist somewhere else. They exist in an Exchange server, they exist in an Outlook.com server, or they exist in a Facebook cloud or Twitter or any or your applications network, right? So we don't think that there's the right case is for us to roam this data across or even restore it from backup and restore. We expect that if the applications are reinstalled that provided that data in the first place, then those applications are responsible for once again writing that data back in, or you reconnect to the same email networks or any of those things, and that data comes back.
I think that's important for developers to hear, because I think you might assume there's some sort of super-duper cloud store that's going on here, but really it's just this one individual device local app cache. That's what we're talking about.
It's a way to aggregate data from multiple different cloud services in most cases.
All right. I'm a Windows Phone 8.1 developer, and I'm pretty accustomed to this API. I'm going to come over to Windows, and I'm going to start using this API. Is it the exact same experience for me?
Yeah, so all of the appointments APIs from 8.1 are exactly the same. The contacts APIs, there was a very limited set in the Windows runtime previously in terms of reading contacts. In terms of writing contacts, that has changed a little bit, so you'll want to look at the documentation for how you do go about doing that. And then things like email and call history were not available at all previously, so those are completely new.
Okay.
And the messaging APIs were actually in the SDK, but they were restricted, so there wasn't a lot of people using them back in Windows Phone 8.1. But those have been expanded greatly from what they were previously.
And when I do interact with those, let's talk about two things. Let's talk about UI for a second. Are your APIs, do they ever invoke a UI that asks the user to do something, or is this always for the developer to build something out and just use this as a lookless kind of API?
So we have a set of what we call the task or action APIs that do bring up system UI. And those are things we have the ability to, like, add a new appointment, to remove an existing appointment, to replace appointments, and then showing the calendar for a certain time frame are all the appointment ones.
Oh, that's cool. So I could show a snap of my calendar as well. That's very cool. Is this UI that you're talking about, is that meant to make it so the developer – is this like a twofold, so the developer doesn't have to create this UI, but also it sort of works as a broker to make sure the user knows what's going on with their system?
That's exactly right, making easy scenarios for developers, and then we don't allow you to edit data that's not yours that you own directly, so that these brokers then have allowed people to create full-featured calendar applications on Windows Phone by invoking the system UI when they're doing certain events or certain changes.
Yeah.
So then in addition to those, we have the ability for, like, contacts. You can bring up system UI to, like, pick people, the people picker API, or to show an existing contact card.
And a contact card we had in Windows 8.1, and I don't remember if we had it in Phone or not.
We didn't have it in Phone previously. So.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's just a simple little screen pre-formatted that grows and shrinks depending on what the capabilities of the device are, right? It could say things like, Skype this person, but if there's no Skype number on that contact, then there's no or it calls them even if they have a phone number, but if it's not a phone device, it doesn't show up. It's a really nice, does a lot of hard work and looks pretty nice. It's a little micro card kind of thing.
Right. So it's called the mini contact card on the Windows desktop SKU. On Windows Phone, it'll always show full screen because if it's a smaller device, but it does show up as a flyout box on Windows desktop. And one of the other sets of APIs that we actually haven't talked about here yet is how you get your application to show up on that mini contact card.
Oh,
That's using the annotations APIs. So those allow you to go in and say, hey, I know about this email address or this person, and I know how to IM this person, I know how to video call this person, I know how to VoIP this person. And once your application registers for that, then you show up there right next to Skype or right next to the phone app as one of the ways to do that for that particular person.
Even in somebody else's app?
Absolutely.
Wow, that is just like Skype, right? I create my own VoIP application called Jerry, and I want to Jerry that person. That sounds gross. But anyway, Jerry that person, and I could do it in any other app it shows up as Jerry that person because I've registered system-wide.
Yep, that's exactly
those
right.
Those are called the annotation APIs. Is that right?
Right. So you're annotating existing contacts. You're saying you're annotating them with information about how you are able to contact that person.
Well, that's fascinating. That's really cool. Does that API loop through all the contacts and mark them as capable, or is this registering a type somewhere in the system?
So you need to say that you understand how to message that particular person. And there's a couple different ways you can go about it. One is you actually read the contacts database with the contacts APIs that we talk about, and you look for what people that you know about. And you can do that based on, you know, name, email address, phone number, postal address, who knows. Or there's a couple of helper APIs in just the annotations namespace. And to use the helper APIs, you don't actually have to declare a security capability because you're not reading any data. But what you can do is you can say, hey, I know about this email address, and this is important to this person who's logged in. And then we'll get back a set of IDs that are like, okay, these IDs match this email address, and then you create annotations for those IDs. So you don't actually have to read any specific data, and you don't have to do the matching yourself. And we do that for email addresses and for phone numbers for you.
And when they tap it, my application launches, and I get a special activation kind, I assume? Something
yeah,
called
it's
like...
A, it's, yeah,
so it's user a, contacts activation
yeah,
type
for,
or something?
For IMs, it would be like a MS-IM launch or
yeah.
an MS-VoIP launch. And then we would include, when you're creating the annotation, you'll write an identifier that you understand for that person. Mm. Now, if your application and network relies on phone numbers because you're a text messaging application or email addresses, then you might use that same identifier for it. Or if you're... something that's using just primary IDs across all their different users, then you might write that primary ID for it. Whatever
my,
you write, we'll
launch
you.
My app shows
you.
Up in the middle card, in the mini card. They tap it. I get it. So it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily call Jerry or something like that. It could be fire Jerry and launch my app and starts an HR process or something like that, right?
I mean, well, we have a predefined set of actions that we support that show up on the contact card. So we hope you do what the user expects. Of course, you know, we're not really going to be able to enforce this, but it might be unsuspecting to the user if they start firing people when they tap on their names when they thought they were IMing them.
your contact list gets shorter and shorter every time you contact somebody. everybody's terrified. No, I got it. You don't have to. You want me to send that to you? No, don't send it. Now, I know that your API has also introduced a few new triggers for background tasks as well. And
yeah,
so
what
happens there? My app would respond when a new contact is added. Is that the sort of scenario that we're supporting?
Yeah, so we're actually supporting changes. So if a new contact is added, modified, or deleted, you'll get a contact change notification. And then we also have similar notifications from the background for appointments, for email, for text messages, and for call history, actually. So we have them for all of them. And those are things like there's a couple different scenarios that we expect those to be useful for. There have been several calendar applications that have been written on Windows Phone already to show different UIs to sort of expand on what was available for the primary application.
Yeah.
So they've never been able to keep their live tiles up to date in real time before, because they've only ever been able to operate every half an hour. So if you get a meeting change 15 minutes before the meeting happens, you might not see that on your live tile.
That could be disappointing.
Right. So now we want to make sure that they can update those in real time the same way that the inbox applications are able to. And if you think about live tiles, and that also applies if you have somebody pinned to start for a contact and that changes, maybe you change their name or their picture or things like that. And then, of course, text messages, you have to know as soon as they come in, and email, you have to know as soon as they come in. So we have the real-time notifications for those.
And I could launch a toast or something that allows them to interact with it. All these things come together in a cool story when you really look at them side by side.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the way that these are secured. So we talked about the privacy page and how the user can go in and they can shut down anybody or everybody if they want to as far as access to this. But what do we do out of the gate? What are some of the default limitations, I suppose, that developers need to know about?
So most of these APIs provide either no or a limited set of write access for the different data types. So developers are able to read contacts that are coming down through Outlook.com or any of these other areas. but they're not able to modify that data directly. They have to invoke one of the Task UI APIs that brings up the ability for them, the user, to then modify that data in System UI.
Okay, so if I had an app that was supposed to scrub all my contacts, that is not supported because I'd be writing to every contact.
Right, exactly.
And it would be a pain for the user. I kind of like this because I don't want an app to go in and scramble my app, all my contacts.
Right, good. But what you can do is if your app is the one providing the contacts to the system, then you have full read and write access to it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yep. So if you're writing the Jerry Dav connector, then you're able to write all of them in. And, of course, you can keep them up to date, and you can change track those. So you can say that they can also be modified by the system. So if somebody, if you're writing contacts in from your application, and then the user goes into the People Hub and modifies one of those contacts, you can be woken up, receive that change notification, see what changed, and then go communicate that back up to your server or wherever the truth is for your particular network.
Yeah.
And it's a very similar idea for appointments and then text messages. We actually allow a limited amount of writing for text messages. We allow you to mark things as read, and we actually allow you to delete text messages.
Okay.
In this case, this is because we, for one, back those up anyways, but we also want to make it possible to write a full-featured text message application, and you really need to do the end-to-end scenario there. What we don't allow you to do yet, though, is to be able to send messages for SMS. So this is something we're trying to figure out how to do the right way, and it's been a source of a lot of malware on Android, especially in the past, because people install an application, and then it goes and sends a bunch of text messages to somebody at $5 a pop.
It reads all my contact list, and then it sends them all.
Oh, no, it sends it to their own phone number, you know, like donations where you can just text message to a certain number, and it charges you $20 on your phone bill. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So we're looking at different ways to enable that. Right now, if you're writing an application that's going to do full-featured SMS sending, you'll want to get in contact with a Microsoft representative, and we can talk about how to get your application whitelisted for access to that.
Okay, so it is possible. This is just, you got to be a special app. You got to work a little bit harder. You can't just write out of the gate and just do one. All right. So if you're serious, if there's a publisher out there, and they're like, this is our business model. We need access to this. There's an answer for you, too, right? Okay, I get it. That makes sense to me. And then what were the other types? And then we talked about...
So email is restricted the same way as SMS sending is. Email is restricted completely right now.
Okay.
And part of that is we hope to make it, as we get into the next release, more open. But email is just kind of, we're working on it, is the way, way to put that. And then the call history ones are also because we actually are those privacy pages we were talking about where the users are able to turn on and off access.
Yeah,
those aren't ready for call history yet. We didn't get those ready for this release, but we are absolutely committed to getting that as soon as we can and available.
And if you're doing enough work to make a full-fledged VoIP app, then you probably are okay going the extra step of contacting you guys and getting it all worked out. That makes sense to me.
We hope so.
I would. Right, me too. the data that I'm saving is the data that I'm saving. Secure? Is it encrypted on the device?
It would be encrypted on the device if the user is using BitLocker, right? So if the user, but we don't encrypt it separately from that. So data at rest, for the most part, we don't really protect against the case where if somebody physically got a hold of the device, opened it up, connected to the hardware pins, were able to read out of it. But it is protected in the sense that it requires the security capabilities for other applications to read that data. And you have different levels that you're able to share the data with applications other than the system. So when you write your contacts in, you have three different levels of sharing that you can set. You can say that all applications are able to read all the contacts data.
Oh, okay.
You can say that applications are only able to read display data, which includes the name and the picture. And so you can think about this is enough to make a basic contact list, but you're not actually getting phone numbers and email addresses and other data in there. Or you can say that other applications aren't able to read this data at all, in which case...
Totally private to me that way.
Well, but the system applications are still able to read it. So then things like the People Hub, the messaging app, and Outlook would still be able to read this data. Because if you're not letting the system read this data, then you might as well just keep it in your isolated storage and not use these APIs at all.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm glad you said it that way. Good, because I was like, is this just a database for my app? No, it's not. So if I create a dedicated container for contacts. I don't know what you call that. Is it a contact container? Is that
maybe contact list?
Contact list. Yep. And I put in, you know, Jerry Nixon. Let's just say, does Jerry Nixon show up in my People Hub now?
Yes, absolutely.
God, that is awesome. All right, so obviously, if you mean for it only be in your application, you wouldn't use this for that. That makes plenty of sense. Sure. All right, now I'm really curious about SMTP, my ability to send email from an application. You know, it's every developer kind of struggles with this, how to do it. Is this a way for an application to send a message now?
So the easiest way is to use the task UI, right? Just to bring up the UI, then the user can choose send or cancel. And that allows you to send a message pre-populating the to address, the subject, the body, add attachments, everything that you need.
Oh, awesome.
Yep. And so that'll send it on both Windows Phone and on Windows. And it's super easy just to bring it up and send the message. If you want to send something silently, programmatically, then that requires the restricted capabilities that we mentioned earlier.
Okay, so yes, you can do it silently, but if you want to, you have to qualify for permission. I guess that's the concept, right, where you reach out to the store. All right, that makes sense to me. I'm a developer, and I'm into these Windows apps. I totally like it, but the reality is I've also got an ongoing WPF application. I wrote, you know, Win32 application that I've written, and I'd like to leverage maybe some of these, call into the contact list. Is that available to me as well?
Yeah, so these are not... We don't provide support. This is not a supported scenario to call into these from Win32 applications. It's sort of the bottom line. Many of them will work. Some of them absolutely will not work, unfortunately. So we rely on certain things like having an application identifier, which is a concept that just doesn't really exist for Win32 applications, and in order to do some of the functionality. So specifically things like change tracking. We keep track of changes for you, and we rely on those kinds of identifiers. Also, writing data into the system is going to probably rely on certain identifiers so that we know how to read, how to reference your application, to know when your application is installed and uninstalled, things like that. So you'll be able to do some of it, but it's not a supported scenario.
And when you said tracking when your application is uninstalled, so when a Windows app is uninstalled, we know it's uninstalled, right? And we do a clean job of it. And I assume all of my private things that I've added to all those different lists, they also are removed when I'm uninstalled as well.
That's exactly right. Yep.
That's what I would want, right? I'm trying to clean my system of whatever that application was. That's very cool. Yep. And I assume apps like that will have their own mechanism for backing up and things like that. So if I'm like, well, before I delete that or uninstall that application, I don't want to lose all my contacts, that app provides that mechanism to me to push it up into the cloud or OneNote or not, or OneDrive or something like that. That's how
In most of the use cases we have, they exist on the cloud anyways. If you are writing an application where a couple examples have been like the private contacts app. So like in Windows Phone, we didn't really natively support a way for the user to save contacts only to their phone and not have them go to the cloud. So there was a use case for people who wanted to download the application that then just saved them only locally on the device. Mm-hmm. And in that case, yeah, it's up to the app. Now, presumably, you don't want them backed up because that was the whole point of the app, not to have them up in the cloud. So in that case, then the user would lose those contacts, but that seems very much by the intention of the application.
Yeah, seems consistent with the way you would expect it to act. Yeah, that's right. Yep. All right, Tony, last question here. A developer is very intrigued by this. There's a lot of ways they could leverage existing lists, maybe even contribute to them as well. They want to start learning more. I know I could send them to your build talk that you just did, right, at Build 2015, or even probably your build talk at 2014 that is conceptually almost the same. Now you just brought it over to the desktop as well. Where else could you send them to learn a little bit more?
Sure. So all of these APIs that we're talking about have been in the Windows.ApplicationModel namespace. So if you go and check on MSDN and you look at Windows.ApplicationModel.contacts or .appointments or .email or chat or phone calls, then that's where you'll find the documentation for all these API sets. We don't have anything posted as of yet for samples, but we are definitely working on getting some things up on GitHub or in other places as soon as we can.
Yeah. That's all inevitable. Hey, we're still in preview. There's a lot to go here. So we're all scrambling to get demos up. Trust me, I'm there with you. Yep. All right, Tony, great. If you're a developer and you're intrigued by this, you should be, because it's a pretty awesome capability. Did you even know that all the contacts and all the calendar items were stored by the system and not by the individual apps? Pretty amazing. You could go in, learn, use it yourself, make your application that much more of a value to the user. And take advantage of all the other features that are there so that you don't have to write all this extra UI to interact with it as well. Tony, hey, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Jerry.
We'll see you again.